Hi, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. You're listening to perhaps the final episode of Mad Money Machine, show 152, where we will once again ask the question, where did the money go? Got an email from Kirsten saying she works with 5440, a Canadian-based band in Vancouver, and they've got a new album called Northern Soul, and it has a track on it titled appropriately, Where Did the Money Go?
Where did the money go? What do you say? Didn't you ever know the name of the game? It feels like none of this is dead or alive. Reaching the void, I guess we do or we die. Even if it's sayonara, baby. Where did the money go? What do you say? Didn't you ever know the name of the game? I love you. Where did the money go? What do you say? Wasted away again. Look at the day. Give us a kiss, my dear. Ease up the pain. 'Cause I wanna make you understand.
Download their song for free. I'll have a direct link to that song in the show notes for show 152. And as I mentioned, will this be the last episode of the Mad Money Machine? I'll talk about that in a little bit. First of all, I don't want to talk about where did the money go? Where did the money go? All right, I want to try this story to see if it helps clear up this question of where did the money go? You know, we do still see the occasionally newspaper headlines say hundreds of billions of dollars lost in the stock market or trillions of dollars lost in stock market drops. Really? Well, maybe. Let's try this. Let's say you own 100 shares of company ABC. ABC company. And you bought those 100 shares for $10 each. That would be $1,000 it took you to buy those shares. And you hold on to those shares like a good buy and holder. And every day you check your portfolio. A year or two goes by. You check the Yahoo Finance and you see that at the close of the day today, that someone paid somebody else $100 for a share of ABC. Someone sold their share of ABC to somebody else for $100. That would be a tenfold difference in what you paid. You paid $10 a share for ABC. You bought 100 shares at $10 a share, $1,000 you paid. But now, according to your spreadsheet, it says, the closing price was $100 times 100. You now have a portfolio valued at $10,000. And so, you know, you're wealthy now. You know, you can do your own 10 multipliers on this illustration to keep going. So somebody bought the shares for $100, and now your portfolio looks a lot more valuable. You still own 100 shares of ABC Company, but it appears that it's worth a lot more on the market. And that is the illusion, I suppose, is that tomorrow could come and the people that own shares of ABC might be willing to sell them for $5. Yeah? And now your portfolio is worth half of what you paid for it. But the fact of the matter is, you still own 100 shares of ABC. You own what you own. You own the shares. The money value is what fluctuates around those shares. Just like the money value of anything, any asset that you own. The money value of a brick of gold that you own. The money value of a farm that you own. It's only a matter of what someone will offer you for it. And that offer can fluctuate widely. Now, the great thing about the stock market and the vast liquidity of the market is there are a lot of people making offers, a lot of people bidding on shares. And so you get a very tight range between the asking price and the bid price on shares that you might own. But on some markets, they're very illiquid, like real estate. And, you know, some markets, they're completely non-liquid, like real estate in Detroit, where houses are, you know, basically being bulldozed, taken over by the city. So it's not really a matter of, was money lost? Maybe we need to talk about it in different terms. There was valuation in shares lost, but the shares are all still there. I mean, with a very small percentage inaccuracy, I can report to you that all of the shares of companies that were in existence 3 years ago are still in existence. You know, there's some companies that go bankrupt and drop out shares, and there are new companies that do occasionally come up. There are mergers and things that happen to change the number of shares of stock that are available. But within a certain percentage, there are still the same number of shares of stock that are available and still the same number of shares of stock that are owned by people out there. Just that there aren't as many high-valued bids on those shares, making their conversion into dollars not as great. That's where the money went. So now to the question of, is this the last episode of the Mad Money Machine? I don't know if everyone knows the genesis of the show or not. A lot of you have been with me since the very first episode, and I appreciate you staying along with me for the ride. We've seen some changes over the 3 years? December 2005. That's more than 3 years ago I started this. Unbelievable. Started it out purely looking at Jim Cramer and his stock picks because, let me tell you, the underlying theme of the entire show, and that is financial freedom. Financial freedom. How do we manage our net worth, our assets, our stock market wealth to get us into financial freedom, which is a a word I use to substitute for retirement. I prefer the word financial freedom instead of retirement because people can find financial freedom in a number of different ways. One way is the traditional way of working for a company all your life as a slave and at the end of it, cashing out your 401k and living off of that and going to Florida, I guess, and buying a little house and a boat and sitting and watching TV the rest of your life with the proceeds that you've saved up over the previous 40 years of working in a cubicle. That's one approach to financial freedom. Another approach is to be frugal, get a job that you absolutely love doing, even though it doesn't pay a whole lot of money. And so enjoy what you're doing, live frugally, enjoy the way you live, and you are financially free in that sense. Of course, another way is just to inherit it. I guess you'd be financially free there. Another way would be to get so much power that money flows to you because you have the power to make it flow to you. You have the power and the force of government behind you to make the money flow to you. I guess that's another way to achieve financial freedom. But I haven't explored those ways as much on this show. I've been focusing on the way of using investments in equities and particularly index funds and lazy portfolios to try to get to financial freedom. And along the ride comes threats to our financial freedom. The threat to our financial freedom. And that's the decision point I'm at now is, in dealing with financial freedom, can I really keep this show going if I have to talk about the threat to our financial freedom? And as I see it, the number one threat to our financial freedom is the monstrous size of the government. And by government, you could point to several different things. The federal government of the United States, governments around the world, world government heads, local governments, state governments, or even more generally, people in power by force. Just power and the abuse of power and how that's bad and it goes against individual liberties. So in talking about financial freedom on the Mad Money Machine, going from looking at Jim Cramer's stock picks to going to index funds and then lazy portfolios and buy and hold strategies and analyzing statistics and trying to invest our capital, our assets in equities to help secure our financial freedom. You know, let me get into two other things. One is talking about my personal decisions. I know some people have criticized me for saying one thing and doing another. And I'm trying to rationalize why I did what I did. And that is I sold all of my stocks by March of 2008. I was completely out of equities except for a couple of little handful of little things. They were still lingering around, like a share of Berkshire Hathaway, and I still have the Southern Copper Corporation and so forth. But one of the things I talked about even before I sold my equities was a dynamically adjustable risk capacity. And some people say that's a euphemism for market timing. And I have to disagree because I really think that you can adjust your risk capacity based upon factors that go into your risk capacity in the first place. What makes up your risk capacity? There are basically five factors that Mark Ebner talks about at Index Funds Advisors. Your income, your net worth, your attitude, your knowledge, and your time horizon. And when those factors change, your risk capacity change. Well, in my case, those factors did change. My net worth dropped. It had dropped from the peak of October 2007 down in December of 2007 and then down again by March of 2008. And that forced a change for me in my risk capacity. Now, truth be told, it probably didn't force it all the way down to zero and perhaps I overreacted. And I'm glad I did. I mean, by the results of it, I'm lucky that I overreacted. Not everyone did overreact. Some people did go buy and hold on the strategy. And, you know, over 10, 20, 30 years, buy and hold should be trying to time the market. So that's one aspect of what I've been talking about over the course of the past 3 years is our capacity towards risk, looking at lazy portfolios. And I think we've got that squared away. I think we understand that lazy portfolios are the way to invest. But now there's another factor that comes into play. In addition to a dynamically adjustable risk capacity, that is, there are two times, Mark Ebner says, when you should sell. One is when you need the money. And the other one is when you lose faith in capitalism. And I've always taken that to be kind of a tongue-in-cheek way of saying there's really only one time you need to sell, and that's when you need the money, because who would ever lose their faith in capitalism? And even in these times, I've got to say, I believe in capitalism. But is what we have now capitalism? That's what's coming into question. And it's at this inflection point where we look at the risk to our financial freedom that I'm not sure if I can keep going with this show. Because in order to talk about financial freedom, I have to talk about the risks to it. I would have to talk about the risks to it. And talking about those risks means I have to talk about the failures in government and the failures in large, powerful accumulations of people, whether they be businesses or large, powerful organizations or societies or whatever. And I don't know that I'm up to that task. I do know that there's plenty of other people who are up to that task, or who are at least trying to tackle that task. And a lot of people on CNBC, of course, the LouRockwell.com, continuously can read that forever. Ron Paul, watch him. Even Glenn Beck, I've been watching more on Fox News, and he's completely turned into this libertarian commentator now. The danger for me, though, is in talking about these threats, trying to convert that into something that is actionable. If you read these threats and you really believe them, then, for example, if it's true that the threat of hyperinflation is on the way, then certainly one aspect that has worked sometimes in the past to counteract that is to get out of the currency that is hyperinflating. Peter Schiff would say, you know, get into even foreign stocks that are high dividend paying, but we can see that that hasn't worked so well. And by the way, all these other foreign currencies, they're fiat currencies as well, and they're locked step with the dollar pretty much. So they're all going to inflate if the dollar hyperinflates, I think. Maybe not the Chinese yuan, or maybe not the Brazilian real, who knows. Gold certainly is a different beast altogether. Gold is money. And in times of a dollar hyperinflating, gold should retain its value because they're not digging trillions of ounces worth of it up out of the ground, are they? Now, if that were to happen, that's where you'd see gold hyperinflating or its value dropping rapidly. But it's not the case. So my problem is trying to interpret the events, interpret the threats to our financial freedom in such a way that we can take action on them. And that's where I get into difficulty in this show. And I come to Thursday, which is the day I'm recording the show in preparation for an early Friday morning release. And all week long, all weekend long, I'm reading as much as I can on the net and watching various news shows and things, trying to assimilate information to make it meaningful for production on this show. And I know that's a change from what I've been doing in the past. And so I don't know. I'm at a decision point as to whether I should continue or not. The one thing is, if I really do get political, would IFA still be interested in being an advertiser on the show? You know, I would think, why do people advertise on Glenn Beck's show, for example? I guess the politics just doesn't rub off onto the soap company, does it? People really don't associate the advertiser with the message on those shows, it doesn't seem like. And I know I don't. Of course, with by watching it on a DVR, I don't watch the commercials anyway. But on this podcast, I integrate into the message of the show the data and the wisdom from index funds advisors. And so it's a tighter weave, and I'm in danger of tarnishing their brand, quite frankly, if I really get into some political topics. By the way, somebody out on drop.io posted a question of why did I bash Hillary and Bill for selling their stocks and why did I talk about Chairman Dodd? Well, it's nothing personal against any Democrat or Republican. Like Glenn Beck said on his show last night, he drew a chart. He said, here's the way we've been thinking about it. On the left, you have the Democrats. Over here, let's draw a scale. All the way to the right, you have the Republicans. We've been talking about Democrats versus Republicans. He erases that, and he draws another scale. On the left, you have total government control of everything. On the right-hand side of this scale, you have complete anarchy and total individual liberties. He said that when the Articles of Confederation were written, he drew a little notch right next close to total anarchy. He said the Articles of Confederation are just about as close as we could possibly come to total anarchy. And then he said right next to that, a little bit further to the left of the Articles of Confederation, he drew a line that represented the United States Constitution. And he said, okay, the Constitution was put in place to tighten up some of the controls on the federal government and give government just a little bit more power over the states and so forth. But now, way over to the left, he drew a picture, he drew a line, one for the Democrats, and just slightly to the right of that one, one for the Republicans. He said, that's what we're focused on, is this tiny little gap between the Democrats and the Republicans, when what we should be focused on is this chasm between total government and total anarchy. And so my message, as you might know, I fall a little bit closer to the right-hand side of that spectrum than I do the left-hand side of the spectrum. And that I believe, the left-hand side of the spectrum is what I believe to be the threats to our financial freedom. And that's why I mention things about some of the politicians, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Chairman Dodd. I could talk about any person in power, just about any person in any kind of powerful situation. Because anyone in power, almost by definition, is against the liberties of someone else, the individual liberties of someone else. And I believe for financial freedom, we do need individual freedoms, not just in finance, but in property and thought and in other rights as well. And when this show started, you know, I didn't know what it was in the Constitution. I didn't know who Ron Paul was. I didn't know what the Federal Reserve was. I didn't know where the word dollar came from. I didn't know the role of the Federal Reserve, and I didn't know the process of creating money. I learned all of these things in the past year and a half or so. And now I can see how they apply to my financial freedom. And I don't know whether I should keep doing a show that talks about this or not then. Don't want to alienate my advertiser. Not sure that you're really interested in it, because there's so many other competing people who have teams of people. Glenn Beck says he hires, 40 people on his staff to bring him material and write for him. Here, it's just me. I mean, the Mad Money Machine corporate towers aren't very tall. So I don't know. The show will probably change. The show will either end completely, or it will go to an irregular time slot. It'll just pop up whenever it pops up, like some shows do. It may stay the same time, or it may completely change content, or it may just end and I'll go off and do something else. Or, here's an idea. Would anyone out there like to buy the Mad Money Machine? Yeah, I'll just sell you the whole thing. The domain name, the iTunes slot, so you can create your own podcast and have a built-in listener base, be in the top 25 in the iTunes investing category. Make me an offer, and it will be yours. Watched a really good movie from Netflix, Deep Impact. I think it's from 1998 or 99. Had Robert Duvall in it and Tia Leone. Do you know Tia Leone? I've enjoyed her movies. She was in Spanglish and Fun with Dick and Jane with Jim Carrey. And really enjoyed that. In this movie, she plays it straight. She's not so comedic. And it was before those two movies anyway. But I look forward to more of her work. I think she is a fine actress. And the movie was great, though. Deep Impact, about a potential comet collision with Earth. Robert Duvall's an astronaut, and they send him out on this spaceship to go blow it up, the comet, before it impacts with Earth. You know, they have a date. I mean, the scientists can tell the exact date and practically the exact time that the comet will hit Earth, and so people can be prepared. And I'm wondering, as I watched this movie, if I replaced Comet with Financial Meltdown, would much of the situations in the movie be the same? You know, one of the differences is we don't know exactly the date and time of a complete collapse in the world economy. But we sure might imagine what the consequences of such a thing could be. And watch this movie, and you'll get an idea, too. All right, this is from a posting I made on the website in January of this year, January 27th. Can the free market work in the United States? Let's say we suddenly start doing everything right according to the Austrian economics playbook. I mean, let's say that Ron Paul suddenly becomes president and chief emperor of the United States, and he gets to do what he thinks we should do in the country. So we go on the gold standard and we abolish the Federal Reserve. We drastically, drastically cut back federal government spending, including all bailouts. We pull back from overseas engagements. Would all of that work? I mean, would we end up more prosperous in the long term than if we stayed the current course? Well, first of all, can you imagine the shock to the economy if all of that happened at once? Could anyone really process all of these changes at once, including all of the second-order effects and how they would impact your particular situation? It would be shocking if done instantaneously. Even shocking if done over the span of 1 year. But big deal. Get over it. We can be shocked and survive, right, for the good of the long-term prosperity if we really believe this is the right way. Yeah. If the USA were a closed system, then I think we might end up just fine. Remember, we're on the gold standard now. And we would trade our gold for the farmer's corn. And farmers would trade gold to buy new tractors. And tractor builders would trade gold for houses and on and on. We would employ all the former government workers as road builders. And new banks would arise in cities eager to lend us some gold for capital projects. We would do just fine here in the USA. It's the fact that the USA is not a closed system that complicates the issue. See, in this process, we trade dollars for gold. In other words, in order to get to this situation, everybody that's got a dollar, we trade it for gold. Let's just say that each dollar is worth 1/900th of an ounce of gold. Or put another way, an ounce of gold is worth $900. You bring in your pieces of paper, your Federal Reserve notes, to the bank, and they'll give you gold coins or a receipt for 100% reserve gold coin storage. So now we all have gold in our pockets or gold notes in our wallets. And now we want to go out and buy that new big screen TV. You know, the super duper HD TV that's coming out with twice as much resolution as the previous HD TV. And so what do we buy that TV set with and from where? Do we buy it with dollars? Not those old Federal Reserve notes. No, they're gone. And a TV made in the USA, is that where we buy it from? Pfft, yeah, right. You find that. No, you got to give up some of your gold now to some other country. So we load up our Walmarts and our Dollar Trees and our shopping malls with stuff that we trade away our gold for. And that represents an outflow of gold from the United States. To keep the system in balance, don't we need a corresponding inflow of gold? Otherwise, someday we might completely run out of gold, right? And we can't just print more gold, can we? Well, it's the same scenario with any government that's left over, any aspect of government that might be left over. How are they going to pay out Social Security in gold? How are they going to send thousands of troops overseas and build billion-dollar airplanes and pay people to read newspapers in fancy offices? Since they don't have a gold mine to readily tap into, they either have to take away your gold or have to borrow gold from some country that has gold, like China, or they have to stop spending gold. Well, the first option, and that is take away your gold, quickly reaches either a point of diminishing returns or reaches a point of torches and pitchforks. The third option, having to stop spending gold, is their option of last resort, which leaves us with the USA borrowing gold from China, which is kind of making my head spin to trying to think about how we're going to come up with the gold, not only to pay that back, but also pay the interest we owe them on the gold that we borrow from China. So maybe that's the point. We would have to figure out some way of getting gold from other countries. We would have to actually make or do things that they want. For example, we could trade our tractors and our corn for their gold, or we could build houses for them, or we could even help build their roads. Either that, or we build our own LCD, super-duper HD TVs, and stock our Walmarts and Dollar Trees ourselves. It would be shocking. But economics does work. So as I ponder this scenario, I realize now just how fortunate we are and prosperous we are, or that we feel that we are, in the USA to have been these past few decades. We have been able to manufacture gold out of thin air. That is, print dollars to trade to foreigners. And we are so lucky that they want our dollars. Because that guy reading the newspaper, he really isn't a very good road builder. So I might as well start doing something different on this show, if I'm going to do something different on the next show, if there is a next show. And I want to play for you in its entirety. It's just about 6 or 7 minutes long. The quote of the week from Index Funds Advisors, their quote of the week, issue number 50. And it's a quote from Warren Buffett. And I'll let the clip explain itself. Now, of course, I'm doing the quotes of the week, so you'll hear my voice doing it. But I'd like for you to subscribe to that quote of the week podcast. I'll have a link to it in the show notes of this show, or you can go to iTunes podcast section in the iTunes store. And search for Index Funds Advisors, Mark Hebner, and subscribe to that podcast, and you will get all of these quotes of the week as they come out. So I want to play this one for you now. I thought it was particularly good. You know, it's just me reading it. They're the ones doing the writing on this. Take a listen. Welcome to Index Funds Advisors Quote of the Week, Issue 50 for March 19th, 2009. Naked Truths. Warren Buffett said in his letter to shareholders, February 28th, 2002, "You only find out who is swimming naked when the tide goes out." Naked Truths. when Melanie Mize wrote her TravelChannel.com review of the top nude beaches in the world, she described exotic locales replete with tropical foliage and the ideal climate for achieving the perfect overall tan. If Warren Buffett is correct, however, it appears that Mize overlooked the most popular destination for those who swim naked. Her oversight is completely understandable, however. After all, the corner of Wall and Broad doesn't even sport a swimming pool, let alone a beach. Despite this fact, however, the ebb of the financial tide has many heretofore big fish scrambling for Wall Street's own version of a fig leaf, good old American greenbacks. The 16-month ebb of the financial markets has been very revealing indeed. Those of us with the stomachs to watch the tide go out have witnessed some shocking events unfold. We recently saw the admission of a $50 billion Ponzi scheme that operated very visibly for nearly 20 years under regulatory radar. That is, until the market's massive dive drove Madoff to come clean about just how dirty he really was. In an almost chilling and intensely audacious move, Madoff described, with a twisted sense of self-satisfaction, just how he was able to destroy the fortunes of thousands and seemingly without a single trade. Madoff's plea statement is available on the web. In an almost delicious irony, the same day Madoff was cuffed and carted away to jail, Jim Cramer unwittingly waded into the role of the emperor who has no clothes. In a pitiful attempt at damage control, in light of Jon Stewart's recent blast against CNBC, Cramer confidently assumed the seat across from Stewart, only to squirm for 30 long minutes. During that time, Stewart methodically and systematically exposed both Cramer and virtually the collective whole of CNBC commentators as nothing more than cheerleaders who permit their corporate guests and analysts to make statements that are left unchecked, despite the reality that CNBC presents its reporters as hard-hitting investigative journalists. Stewart seized the opportunity to reignite the fury that we posted on our IFA.com website back in December 2007, when Cramer bragged about the ease with which he could manipulate markets. Stewart's characteristic humor turned angry as he asserted that Cramer's remarks showed that analysts and correspondents at CNBC were painfully aware of the vulnerabilities of the financial system that could be played for profits, and that CNBC viewers were vulnerable to be unwitting participants in a much bigger game. "You know, look, we're both snake oil salesmen to a certain extent," Stewart told Cramer, "but we do label the show as snake oil here. Isn't there a problem selling snake oil as vitamin tonic?" Media coverage on Cramer's evisceration is high. In a March 16 Tech Ticker broadcast, host Aaron Task, the same fellow who interviewed Cramer during his inglorious indiscretion about market manipulation, asked Cramer to clear the air by appearing on Tech Ticker. According to Task, Cramer's email response left little room for misinterpretation. "I appreciate you asking me to come on and expressing the opportunity to call attention to it and continue to wreck my career, but I think I will take a pass." The recent pummeling of the financial markets has been far from a day at the beach. Nonetheless, for the last 16 months, we have all watched as the financial tide rolled out. Sometimes painfully, we've been pulled by the currents of the markets. We've smelled the stench of rotten business practices as they litter the headlines, and we've seen just a few too many swimmers emerge completely naked and begging for cover. Indeed, it's been painfully illuminating, but such revelations bring clarity. Charlatans, shysters, and showmen have been fully exposed for precisely what they are. Generations of investors have been provided with an up-close and personal view about the importance of transparency, the hazards of leverage, and the danger of blindly trusting snake oil salesmen. Unfortunately, the currents of unwise practices and untrustworthy people will roll back in with the tide. They will only cease to pull at you when you become educated enough to not be led by them. 81 years of stock market history shows us that the tide rolls out and the tide rolls in. Over time, those who are properly outfitted can best withstand the short-term market currents. When your asset allocation is properly aligned with your risk capacity, you can sit on the beach, watch the ebb and flow of the tide and the spectacle it may bring, and not have to worry about being overexposed. There are no absolute guarantees in investing. When reviewing any back-tested performance information on IFA.com, please read the disclosure for back-tested performance information at IFABT.com. So I hope you like that. Quote of the week, subscribe to Index Funds Advisors Podcast, IFA.com. Also, you can read them or you can get them via email if you just like reading instead of listening. So I want to thank you for coming along for the ride with me on Mad Money Machine. I would appreciate your ideas as to whether the show could continue or not. I mean, I assume by the fact that you're still subscribed that there's something you find enjoyable about the show. But I need some ideas as to if I go forward, how to go forward. How to go forward. What should I talk about on this show? And what do you enjoy about the show? So get me your ideas. I'll give you feedback links in just a minute. One thing I do want to tell you is please go out to the Index Funds Advisors website at IFA.com. They bring you the Mad Money Machine and take their risk capacity survey to figure out just what mix of equities and fixed income you should be in, and also what mix of equities you should be in according to your capacity for risk. And then sign up for an account with them. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money. It takes knowledge to make money, too. And it takes true freedom to make a Mad Money Machine. Stay subscribed, folks, because I may do another show or two throughout the coming weeks, months, and years. Or who knows, maybe someone will buy the show and you'll get something really great on this channel. See me on Twitter. I still be out there at Mad Money Machine, twitter.com/Mad Money Machine. Subscribe to that feed. You can call me if you like at 571-366-7121. Leave a voicemail message. You can go to drop.io/Mad Money Machine to give feedback about the show. And, of course, as always, email feedback@madmoneymachine.com. I wish you the best of luck in finding your financial freedom.
Please hang up and try again.